Thanks, team. Morning, everyone. Good to see everybody this holiday season. It's been a few weeks. We've been away. Came back feeling really good. Good to be back. My name's Tim, one of the pastors here. If we haven't met, it's nice to see you. You may have noticed that coloring books have become a thing again. When you were a kid, you probably got a coloring book, and you would open the pages. You'd have a blank page with an outline of an image, and you would spend countless hours with pencil crayons or crayons or felts, depending on your age, and you would color in the outline. You would fill in the details so that at the end, you'd get a beautiful picture. Well, this has become a thing for adults, too, in the last few years. You may have noticed there's specifically adult coloring books. I personally think it's a little bit weird, but some of you may be into that kind of thing. But you know the joy of starting with an image that's just the outline. When you flip a page, you can look at it and you can get an idea of what the finished product is going to be, but you don't see it in its full beauty until every part is colored and shaded carefully, right? The picture at the end, if you're a good colorer, looks better than the outline that you just have at the beginning. Why do I tell you this? Well, I think the story that Jesus tells that we're going to be looking at together this morning, we kind of get a bit of an outline at the beginning, a blank coloring sheet, and the further that he gets into this story, he's masterfully coloring it in so that at the end, we see the beauty of what he's actually saying that has to do with the extravagant love of God for people. Please pray with me, and then we will get into our text for this morning. Father, I pray that this morning, by your Spirit, you'd be coloring in that sheet. I pray that by the end, with the words that you give, I pray that they would give us a beautiful picture of what it is you want to say to us this morning. Thank you that your Spirit's alive and active and that your word never returns void. So help us to leave here changed this morning, different than we came when we got here. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen. Really, when I color, they look worse at the end than they did at the beginning. True story. Not good at that kind of thing. But if you have a Bible with you this morning, please open it to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, we are going to be tackling a very famous parable this morning. And I'm a little bit scared to do it because it is such a famous parable, the prodigal son, the story that we know as a prodigal son. So you need to know up front, there's so many layers to this story that it would be impossible this morning for me to get to bring everything out that is there. So I invite you to do some deeper thinking and meditation on this in the week coming. Maybe you have been this week already. You've been reading through the parable. If you've been following the little card that we made, maybe God's already been speaking to you through it. But just know, as we tackle this, I might not be able to say everything that you hope that I say, because it is such a big one. The beginning of Luke chapter 15, this is setting the stage, the context for this parable that we know so well. We're told that Jesus has been attracting a crowd. Verses 1 and 2 says, tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, all near to hear him. So Jesus is drawing a crowd. He's going around. He's preaching about this message of inclusion for the outcasts, inclusion for the lost in this new kingdom that he's doing. Those who have always felt excluded, he's including. He's saying there's even room for you, sinners and tax collectors, in my kingdom. So these people, of course, that's good news to them. They're following him around. They're drawing near to hear him. And of course, there's another group of people, and they're the religious people, the ones who've always been concerned with keeping the law, of having their place in God's family be because they think, because of the good things that they do. And it really upsets them that Jesus is opening the doors of the kingdom to tax collectors and sinners because they're below them. They don't rise up to their standards. So these religious leaders are grumbling, it tells us in verse 2 of chapter 15. And they're angry. They say, this man, Jesus, receives sinners and tax collectors, and he even eats with them. They're ticked that Jesus would do this. And the word receives that it, that it uses isn't like a passive, they're coming to him and Jesus says, okay, come here, guys. He's actively receiving tax collectors and sinners. He's intentionally pursuing tax collectors and sinners so that he can eat with them. And that grinds the religious people. So in response to their grumbling, Jesus tells three stories. Because every good message has three points, right? I think that's where preachers got that from. That's the way Jesus did it here, so that must be the way to do it. So he tells three stories. We're going to be looking at the third one, but let me give you a brief overview of the first two. In response to the grumbling of the Pharisees for Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, Jesus says, hey, let me tell you a story, guys. There's a man, and he has 100 sheep. And of course, we know this to be true. If one sheep wanders and gets lost, that shepherd, that man, is going to go after the one. He's going to leave the 99 in a field where they're safe, and he's going to go pursue that one because that one is valuable to him too. And when he finds that one lost sheep, he's going to grab that thing, stick it on its shoulders, and he's going to run home. And as he's running home, he's going to be calling the neighbors and all of his friends, and he's going to say, rejoice with me, I found the one that I lost. Jesus says, there'll be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 who don't need it. Second story follows a similar trajectory. Jesus says, there's a woman. She has 10 silver coins that are valuable to her. She loses one of them. If she loses one of those coins, of course, she's going to grab a broom, and she's going to sweep her house. She's going to turn everything upside down to try and find that one coin. Because she had 10, and now she only has 9, and she really wants to have 10 again. That one is valuable to her. Even though she has 9 still, that one is valuable. When she finds it, she's going to rejoice, she's going to call her friends, she's going to have a party, and then it says that's the joy in heaven over one sinner who repents. So this is Jesus' response. Here's the outline of the coloring sheet. It's Jesus eats with tax collectors and sinners because they're precious to God the Father, and he finds great joy when they come back to him when they're found. There's the outline of the coloring sheet. There's what Jesus is telling the Pharisees, you guys, they're lost. And when they're found, there's rejoicing. So why are you grumbling? Why does that make you so mad? And then he gets on to the parable of the prodigal son, the one that we're going to look a little bit deeper at. But we needed to see the context there. Something's lost, it's found, there's rejoicing, because we're going to see that same pattern in this parable. And I want you to look for it. It'll come up on the screen. I'll just read a couple verses at a time, talk about it. We'll get through it, and then we'll have a so what at the end. Here's the story. And Jesus said, this time, there was a man who had 2 sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Pause. There's a man who has 2 sons, just like there's a woman who has 10 coins, and there's a man who has 100 sheep. Now there's a man, he's got 2 sons. So the hero of the story, right off the bat, we know that this is a story about the man, right? Just like the first two stories are actually about the man that owns the sheep and the woman who owns the coin. This is about the man. He's the hero of the story. He's who the story is about, but he has 2 sons. The younger one, who's always the punk one, right? We know that. I'm a younger son in our family. 2 sons, I'm the punk one who is always getting in trouble, so I resonate with this guy. The younger one comes up to his dad, and he said, well, his dad's still alive, and he says, Dad, I want my share of the inheritance. Doesn't that just seem like a cheeky thing to do? Well, his dad is still alive. Dad, I want my money now that I deserve later, but I really want it now. Some people would say it's kind of like the guy walking up to his dad and saying, I wish you were dead, Dad. But while that's one way to take it, we know this was a common practice in the time. It wasn't uncommon. Some sons did this, and their dads gave them the inheritance. So this son walks up to his dad. Dad, I want my money that's coming to me. And the dad, he does it. He obliges, surprisingly. The dad doesn't say, forget it, son. I'm not dead yet. He says, okay, I'm going to give you... I'm going to give you this. He obliges. So now the son's got this property. Verse 13, not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country and he began to be in need. Dad, I want your money and then I want to take it as far away as I can from you. I'm tired of living under your roof. Dad, I want freedom. I want to go sow my wild oats. So I'm going to go as far away as I can from your care, Dad. I'm going to take care of myself now. I don't want to live under your roof anymore, is basically what the boy says. And he goes as far away as he can. It says, not long after, not many days after. So this happened quick. This is why this son wanted the money. He wanted to take it. He wanted to live free. He wanted to live by his own terms. And there, what does he do? He squanders it. He squanders it in reckless living. Reckless living. Let your imagination flow wild. We learn later on in this story that that had to do with prostitution. We know that he was into partying, all these kinds of things. He took everything that he had and he flushed it down the toilet. And when he spent everything, there was a severe famine. That made it worse. He went from having everything to having nothing, and now there was a famine. This is pretty low for him. He began to be in need. We're supposed to feel the tragedy of this, right? Going from his father taking care of his every need to saying, give me what I deserve, Dad, to I'm going to live without you, and now he's left with absolutely nothing. Wasn't it better at home, do you think? Verse 15, so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed the pigs, and he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. Starts with a pursuit of personal freedom away from his dad, turns into being enslaved to another human being. He couldn't meet his own needs, it didn't pan out the way that he wanted, so he hired himself to somebody. Maybe he'll take care of my needs, the guy thought. Anybody but my dad. And the guy sent him into a pig field. And if this was a Jew, and we would assume that it is, that's the lowest of the low. Pigs were unclean animals. This is Jesus is painting the picture of right on this guy's forehead, sinner. He went and did he broke every rule. He ran from his dad, he squandered, he wandered, reckless living, prostitutes, pigsties. He was sitting in it, and it was his fault. He had nobody to blame for where he was other than himself. This is bleak, isn't it? Where this guy's sitting? And the Pharisees who are listening to this story are probably like, yeah, I hope he stays there. He deserves it. He brought it upon himself. But the story takes a turn. Verse 17, there is hope. Verse 17, and we're supposed to see here, sinner, the kind of sinner that Jesus was eating with and receiving is this guy that's wandered that far. Verse 17, but when he came to himself, this is a turning point. He said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger. I'm going to arise, I'm going to go to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. Okay, so this guy has an epiphany. He's sitting there away from his dad, and you could argue away from himself, and he comes to himself. And he says, wait a second, I'm sitting here in a piggy sty, eating piggy food, and my dad's hired servants at home are feasting. What am I doing? Why would I be okay with this? Why would I keep wanting to go down this road? I have nothing. My dad has everything. He's rich. Maybe I should go back to him. But the thought doesn't even cross his mind that his dad may take him back as a son. He's just hoping for a place with the other slaves, with the other servants. But you know what? He would have taken it because at least he would have had something then. He rehearses his I'm sorry, Dad speech. here while he's sitting in the sty. I'm sorry, Dad, please take me back. I don't deserve to be your son. Maybe I can be your hired servant. Dad, I'll take anything. I'm dying here. Verse 20, and he arose and came to his father. So he makes a choice. While he's sitting in it, he says, I don't want to keep going down this road. I'm going to turn and I'm going to start heading back towards my dad. Commentators read that and they say Jesus is pointing his finger in that moment and he's saying, here's where this guy's repenting. The sinner is repenting. He is turning away from the way that he was going and he's turning back towards his father. He's acknowledging his guilt and he's ready to turn back to his father. He arose and came to his father. Verse 20. Oh man, how's his dad going to receive him? I think we know how the story goes, most of us. But this should be shocking. How is the father going to receive him? What's he going to say? What's he going to do when he sees him? There's a tension. But while he was still a long ways off, okay, this gets so good. His father saw him and he felt compassion. He ran and he embraced him and he kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. Why? This my son was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and he is found. And they began to celebrate. He began to celebrate. This is the picture that we all love. Ken put this picture up for us. This is a painting that the artist Rembrandt painted. The story of the prodigal son, he took three shots at trying to draw this thing out the best that he could because he resonated with this. He painted this in 1668, and it's become one of his most famous works. Here you see the scene that I just read to you. You see the prodigal in tattered rags. If you could see his feet, you could see that he had no shoes on. He had half a sandal on one of his feet. His head shaved because he had stooped so low. And you see the father in his robes, his fancy robes, embracing his son. Do you see the look on the dad's face? I know what you did, son. I know what you did. I've been waiting for you. That hurt me, son. All that stuff that you did, but come here, boy. I've been waiting for you. He feels compassion for him. So the picture is of this dad whose son has flipped him the bird and he's sitting outside of his house waiting for the day that he's going to come home. It didn't matter what he had done. The dad sees him and he doesn't see his sin, he sees his son. And he feels compassion and he runs. Okay, any man at the time, this is undignified, because to run, he would have had to pull his robe up. And he does that. He gets undignified for his son, to run to his son, to hug him, to embrace him. That word is to fall on his neck. They're weeping. They're in each other's arms. And the dad's just saying, son, son, you're back. I can't believe you're back, son. And the son starts to say the speech that he rehearsed in his father's arms. He starts to say, Dad, I've sinned against you. I'm not worthy to be called your son. And his dad cuts him off before he says, will you take me as a hired servant? And the dad says, servant, go get my boy a robe. Get him a ring, get him shoes. All these things signified sonship. In that sense, the dad is saying, you know what, son? You're not going to be my servant. You're my boy still. You're my boy still. You've always been my boy, and you always will be. And he throws a party to celebrate. Now, what's missing from this picture that we would expect? If you were the dad or you were the parent and your son wandered like this, and you saw them coming down the road, why I oughta... How could you do that to me, son? You may keep him at arm's length for a while and say, you got to earn your way back into my embrace. How could you do that to me, boy? But no, that's not the response of this dad. It's embrace. It's love. It's grace. It's bestowing sonship back upon him. It's not letting him feel like a servant. It's over-the-top extravagance. Because his boy was lost and now he's found. This is what it's like, Jesus is telling the Pharisees. This is what it's like in heaven when one sinner that Jesus was spending time with comes to the Father. This is why we celebrate. This is what the celebration looks like. And it really is cause to celebrate. And we love this story, don't we? This is one of the most moving pictures in all of Scripture in my mind. I can weep just looking at this picture for days, thinking of what that must have felt like, that son, what he had done. He knew what he did. And it must have stung to still be loved by his dad. It was beautiful, but it must have stung at the same time because he knew that he let him down. He knew that he had blown it. We love this part of the story, and a lot of the time, this story ends here. It's the story of the prodigal son. But Jesus chooses not to end this story here. This is a picture of what it's like for a sinner to return. But Jesus tells about a second son. This is where it turns different than the first two stories that he told. Instead of just somebody lost being found and they're being rejoicing, now Jesus says, wait a second. There's another son in this story, and you know what? He's lost too. His lostness just looks more subtle. The older son that we're going to be looking at, the first son represented the sinners and tax collectors. And the older son represents the Pharisees, the ones that are grumbling at Jesus receiving sinners the way that he did. Here's the story of the older brother that we miss a lot of the time. Verse 25 says, now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother's come and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. So the other son is out in the field working. He's laboring for his dad. He's putting in his time. He's putting in his hours, and he hears music and dancing. That's not a regular thing around their house, apparently. So he comes in and says, what's going on here? And the servant says, it's your brother. It's your brother. He came back. Isn't it amazing? Your brother came back, and your dad's throwing him a party. And it's not just any party. He killed the fattened calf that we've been hanging on to for a special occasion. How'd the older brother respond? Did he celebrate? Verse 28, but he was angry and he refused to go in. So the older brother, he comes in from the field from working, sees that there's a party, hears that it's for his punk little brother that took stuff and left. And he's angry. He's upset. He's standing outside the house like this. I can't believe it. He's back. That guy's back. I can't believe it. And what does the father do? Just like the father did when he saw his younger son coming who had wandered, and he goes out to him, the father notices his older son staying outside, and he goes out to him. He goes out to him too, and he entreats him, it says. This is how the father responds. His father came out and entreated him. He goes out to him. Entreating is the word to plead. The father goes out and to plead with his older son. Won't you please come in? Come in and celebrate with us. You don't need to stay out here. I want you to come in. He entreats him. He pleads with him. Remember, this is the Pharisees. This is Jesus pleading with the Pharisees not to stay outside where they are. But he answered his father, verse 29. Look, We get the guy's heart here. We get why he's angry. Look, these many years I've served you, and I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who's devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. Oh, this guy, what a response to the extravagant mercy of his dad to his son. Dad, he doesn't deserve to be called your son after what he did, but I do. Look at everything that I did for you, Dad. How dare you throw a party for him after what he wasted? I stayed, Dad. I kept working for you. I followed your rules. I did not disobey you. He said, I served you and I never disobeyed you. That gives us a picture of the motivation of the older brother for staying home. How did he view himself with his dad? A servant and a rule follower. That's why I deserve to be called your son, Dad. Look at what I did. This exposes the older son's heart of focusing so much on his performance and neglecting his position. I got to perform for you, Dad. That's why you should be happy with me. That other guy didn't perform, so you should be angry. He shouldn't be called your son anymore, Dad. And the father responds to him. After listening to his whiny little tirade, the father says to him, Son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. After the boy's response, his anger that his dad would take his brother back, the dad doesn't get angry with him. Remember, this is the dad that went to plead with him. The dad reminds him again of who he is. He says, son. Son. And that word son, in this particular translation, is actually a different word that's translated son every other time in this passage. This is a more intimate son. The word used is one that conveys more intimacy. The dad, even after the older brother's anger at his grace, says, son, boy, you've always been with me. What are you angry about, son? You've always been with me. We've always had each other. And everything that I have has been yours all along. Why are you so upset? Why are you so upset? You haven't lost anything, son. You've had me this whole time. How could you not see that? You're pouting about a party and you've had me all along and your brother didn't. He didn't recognize it. He didn't realize it. Of course we need to celebrate when he comes back. But you've always had me. And that should be enough for you. All that extra time that we got to spend together, son, around the dinner table, around the fire, working out in the field during the day, your brother didn't get any of that. You did, son. You did. Thank you for staying. I'm glad that you stayed, but maybe you're staying, you missed out on intimate relationship with me. I resonate with the older brother. And some people have said that the older brother represents long-time churchgoers. I think I agree. How easy is it for us to like the older brother, have the attitude of, God, how dare you receive back prodigals who have done everything wrong when I've stayed here and I've followed your rules? Why would he get such a good reward and I get nothing? What's the point of me following your laws, God, if you're just going to bless him and give me nothing? But the dad says, you've always had me. I've always been with you. You're not worse off than your brother. I don't love either of you guys because of what you do for me. I love you because you're my sons. And that doesn't change regardless of your behavior. So what? What do we get from this passage? A couple of quick things. Because I think the passage kind of speaks for itself. The first thing is a warning. I think we need to beware of the danger of forgetting who we are. Beware of the danger of forgetting who you are. We see both sons in this passage have time when they actually forgot who they were. The younger son, his sin pulls him away from his dad, and he spiraled deeper and deeper away from his father, which actually led him further and further away from him remembering who he was. That's why in verse 17 it says, and he came to himself. He had a realization where he remembered, oh yeah, this is who I am. His sin led him away from who he actually was. And with the older son, we see he forgot who he was. He forgot that he was a son because he started to believe he was a slave. He was a slave and not a son was how he viewed himself. And both of them needed to come to themselves and be reminded that they were sons, not because of what they did for their dad, but because of who their dad, what their dad had done for them. They're both sons because the father chose to love them. The father chose to love them. They were children. We are children, not because of what we do for God, but because of what he's done for us. So some of us here this morning feel like the prodigal. We've wandered. We've squandered. We've done the worst. You might be sitting in the piggy sty, saying, my dad won't love me if I go back. I can't go back. I can't go back. But God says, you're my son, come home. You're my daughter, come home. You're not too far gone. You're never too far to return, as long as you want to return. You're never too far to return, as long as you want to return. And the older son, who's standing there with his arms crossed, saying, dad, how dare you? I deserve it. I deserve it. God still says, come on, son, come in. Come in. You guys are both sons. You're both sons. Neither of you became my son because of what you did. It's because of my grace that you're children. I don't love you because of what you do for me. I love you. Now, come here, boy. I imagine the father wanting to embrace even the older brother. Come here. Come in. Come in, it's happy in here. You're not my slave, you're my boy. So the first thing is the danger. Beware the danger of forgetting who you are. If you're here this morning, and if you know Jesus, if you've put your faith in Jesus, you are God's child. You are his child. Don't live like you're his slave. Don't live like you're a slave, please. And the second, this feeds into the second thing, which is return to the prodigal God. Usually the word prodigal, we think of the wanderer, the one who overspent, because the word prodigal has two meanings. The first is lavish spending or reckless spender, and that's why we call the prodigal son, because he spent recklessly. And another meaning of the word prodigal comes from the Latin word prodigus, which means lavish. Lavish. So what I'm imploring you is to return to the prodigal God. Return to the lavishly loving, gracious, merciful God. Because that's what he is like. Because that's what he is like. You think you've done too much bad? No. Come home. His arms are open. You need to picture whenever you're wandering away from God in sin and you're feeling distant from God, the point is not to keep going that trajectory. It's to turn and to picture the loving arms of the Father waiting to receive you back. To not sit in pity and despair and hopelessness, but to turn and say, oh yeah, my dad loves me. when I go back to him, he isn't going to slap me. He isn't going to say, what were you thinking? He isn't going to wait for me to apologize before he runs to me. He's going to run to me. And yes, I'm going to apologize, but it's going to be from already within his loving arms. That's what it's like when a sinner, when a Christian who wanders comes back to his dad. It's not come back, stay at arm's length, confess, oh, please forgive me, God. Please forgive me, God, while he's already got his arms wrapped around you. Because he loves you like that. Don't keep him at arm's length. Run, because he's running. And older brothers need to return as well. And the return of the older brothers, the longtime churchgoers who are angry that God would accept people who aren't as good as them, who haven't performed like them, the return for people like me is to remember how we became God's children. That it was through the blood of Jesus. And that's the grand equalizer in God's family. There's no one up here and no one down there, sons and daughters of the loving, gracious God. So I'll just, if the band could please come up. We got a couple songs. I hope we have time to do two. The first one is an invitation to respond to the love of God. The first one's an invitation to respond for anyone who feels like they've wandered too far. And the second song is just an identity song, talking about who we are, reminding ourselves of who we are, even if we don't feel like it.